L-L-C-I-T-Y. That's all we need. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host, Alex, and with me I have Logan. How are you, Logan?
Good evening, Alex. Mate, I'm doing pretty well. Very excited for the final week of the championship. I feel like there's a lot more on the line than what we were perhaps expecting this time last week.
Yeah, I was just having a look back through the last couple of podcast titles and, you know, you sort of get the optimistic tone and then the pessimistic tone, you know, season's over and now we're back into glimmer of hope and now daring to dream. I had to look back. I feel like I've used dare to dream as the title of podcast episode quite a few times, but I think it's quite apt, particularly in this case. It's just been a remarkable 7 days, really, like looking back at the Coventry game and then the Ipswich game. And I suppose we'll start with that Coventry game. But just the fact that, I mean, we were talking just before the episode, specifically in the Ipswich game, the resilience of the side to not be beaten and to not kind of give up and to keep coming back. But the Coventry game as well, it was obviously, and the commentator kept saying in the Ipswich game, it was very much the reverse, where against Coventry, we took the lead and then we were pegged back and then we took the lead again and we were pegged back and then finally we scored the winner. But the determination of the side to just keep pushing and pushing and not give up and not drop our heads was remarkable. And yeah, that win against Coventry really set us up for the week that was.
Yeah, it really did. I think you probably add a little bit more sauce onto the fact that they'd had that result against Man United in the cup tie, which they were kind of the talk of the country, I think, for the effort that they put in against United, and were really hard done by in the end. But for a championship team to recover from a 3-goal deficit and losing penalties the way they did, like I think they would have themselves been really optimistic about that game, because still I think mathematically they could still have snuck into the playoff positions if things had have gone their way. So they had a lot to play for, and they did have a huge amount of momentum coming out of that result. So yeah, I thought that the Coventry game was a really tricky one, and it was always going to be that way, but I think adding that into the mix made it all the more difficult, and just the resolve to stay in it and win it in the fashion that we did, with that that scrappy hustle kind of follow on from Ohio, which really sums up the dogged nature of how City have been. Like, not everything's been polished. There's been some really good patches, but ultimately it's just been that extra kind of 110% push of effort to really try and make a fist of getting that sixth spot. So it's been really enjoyable to watch. And, as we said, the word that comes to mind in the last 7 days is probably proud.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about the winner from Ohio, but I mean, I think all 5 goals in this game were questionable or I don't even know what the word is, chaotic maybe is the right word for it, in the sense that you look at Philogene's first goal, where the keeper really should be doing better. I mean, to be very generous to him, I'll say on the replay, obviously, I think it bounces right at the wrong moment for him. He mistimes it, sort of just bounces over his hands. Then their first goal, where Delap is arguably fouled near the halfway line, and Seri gets the ball before taking out the Coventry player. So it's a bit of a 50-50 if that's even a free kick. It's a great free kick that they score, no doubt about that. But then our second goal, potentially not even a penalty. Like, the player's down behind play, they're claiming a head injury. I'd actually say in that case, credit to the ref, because you see that quite often where players will just go down to stop and break up a bit of momentum, and he didn't actually have a head injury. But then Delap's potentially not even in the box. Then for the third goal, the ball's probably out before they cross it in. The fourth goal, that was the fourth goal. And then the fifth goal, the winner, it's, a back pass to their keeper that Ohio's just basically standing in the way of. It's a very, dare I say it, Oscar sort of goal of just, pressing the keeper, sort of forcing the error and bouncing it. Coventry must be sick of us, because, of course, Oscar got the hat-trick against them last season doing something pretty similar. But it was just a game of very wild sort of goals.
It was a game of very wild goals, like, especially when you outline them like that. I actually hadn't really paid as much attention to it until you itemize it and break it down. But I think it probably just speaks to the nature of the contest of two pretty tired teams that are, 44 games into a championship season. Then you add cup ties and things on top of that. It's kind of, without sounding too, you know, cliche, it's kind of the sort of scrappy game that you know begin to expect and at this time of the season, particularly when there's like nerves on the line and so much to play for. So, I mean, it's not surprising in the sense that was the type of game that we saw. But yeah, I was just so impressed that we were able to stay in the contest and pinch it, because, you know, if that Ohio scrap goal doesn't go in, we're not having this conversation right now and you know, praising the. Well, about to praise the the performance against Ipswich.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked there about nerves and the potential for nerves to sort of undo teams. And you look at how we reacted to nerves against teams like Stoke, where we drew 0-0 without even a shot on target. To contrast that with these two games, where we've scored 6 goals in the space of 4 days or whatever it is. Yeah. Whatever Rossini has done, whatever he's done to release the handbrake or, you know, whatever it is, whatever term you want to use for it, it certainly seems to be working. Carvalho, Philogene in some absolutely cracking form, too, fan as well. I think they're all into double digits now, or Carvalho's on 9 or something like that. I mean, they're all to have close to 30 goals between those three, and then, you know, Delap, of course, getting a goal against Ipswich as well, so he's getting back up there as well. You're kind of getting 30 or 40 goals between 3 or 4 players is a remarkable return.
Look, I actually, you kind of hit the nail on the head with as far as those performances, and it seems like something's clicked with Rossini. I honestly think it's probably one of two things, or maybe a combination of both. But ideally for me, I think it's the fact that Rossini's worked out like his best squad. I think the fact that you've got Ohio coming on late in the game, you've got, Tufan playing like larger patches, and then we don't always see him finish games. The fact that we've, you know, just it's like he's been able to tinker with a squad that is now kind of playing people at the right times. And I don't know. I think that just is, it's a really difficult thing. And like, in all honesty, for a City manager in recent years, we haven't exactly had, you know, the biggest squads that have had this much depth and the caliber of player. And I think that it's kind of been, in many ways, not only has Rossini tried to instill, you know, a philosophy and a playing style, but, you know, he has really had to kind of work at finding the right pieces to put in the right holes, you know, for that. And then ultimately, I think it's also got a lot to do with the fact that we've, you know, in the latter half of the season, we have had Jaden Philogene injured for quite some time. We have been without Delap. You know, Connolly has featured, and then he's kind of, you know, got injured and almost disappeared. And I think that all of those things, you know, it has been a case of Liam's had to really work out how to play this squad and have them buy into that philosophy that he started with. And then we've also had some key people come back. But, you know, the form of Carvalho at the moment, and as you said, it's not just the actual playing form, but it's also the caliber of goal scoring that you know, that these players bring in. I don't want to take the words from Liam Rossini, but in his post-match Ipswich conference, he said, you know, he's never really worked with a group of lone players that are so committed to the club. And I thought that was a fascinating comment to make. And, you know, I think the statistics, you know, don't lie, especially when you consider that, you know, Tyler Morton has also been in that picture, and he was withdrawn halfway through. But I know I'm jumping a game ahead, so.
Yeah, I was just having a look at it. So 12 goals for Philogene, 10 for Tufan, 9 for Carvalho, and 8 for Delap. So that's pretty, you know, 39 goals, close to 40 goals between. If you had 2 strikers on 20 goals each, you're calling that a pretty prolific partnership. And in actually what we've got instead is the front four contributing quite evenly. Which is remarkable, and in some ways it actually makes the team stronger, because you have that unpredictable nature of, you know, you've got 4 players to worry about. You don't just have the strikers to quieten down like we did with Wright and Sims. But, yeah, just on this game as well, I thought Ohio coming on and getting the winner, I thought, and we'll talk more about him with the Ipswich game as well, but there was moments in this game where he was holding the ball up really well. I think it was one play, might be in the Ipswich game, so I might be jumping ahead as well, but there was one play where he lost possession, but then his follow-up effort to win the ball back and regain possession was really admirable as well. I think talking about Rossini, talking about his impact with these lone players, it's a massive credit to him when you see someone like Ohio, who, I'll put my hand up, after the first, you know, handful of appearances from him, I didn't think that he was up to the level. I didn't think that he was someone we should be looking at bringing back next season. I didn't think he, you know, he got the winner against Rotherham, but it felt a bit, you know, right place, right time. But he's, and you know, Rossignol said it as well, he's gone away, he's worked on his fitness, he's actually shown a willingness to buy into the team tactics, mentality, ethos, whatever you want to call it. And he's now seeing the results, and he's come on in the last two games, and he's, you know, not got a winner against Ipswich, but he's effectively got, you know, as close to it as you can by rescuing that game for us. So to have 2-2 for him as well, it's a massive credit to him, and it's a massive credit to the manager as well. Like it shows, like when you said the comment about him never having had this sort of group of lone players who are so committed to the club, my mind immediately went to Malcolm Ebioe last season and the lack of effort from him. And you contrast it, we go, if the players are willing to buy in and actually are on board with the project and they commit wholeheartedly, the results speak for themselves. And you look at these players, you look at Delap, you look at Morden, you look at Carvalho even. I mean, Carvalho was playing in the Champions League and playing for Liverpool, but I think I heard the stat that his best ever goal return to date was 10 goals for Fulham in, you know, 10 in 35 appearances or something like that. And he's got 9 in, you know, 16 appearances or something for us. So he's having arguably the best spell of his career as well. So it's a massive credit to the manager and what he gets out of these players.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was in that same press conference, he was really quick to thank the coaching staff. And he says that it's kind of a club philosophy. It's the fact that everybody in the back room, you know, is doing their job. It's not just a case of like, oh, you know, I'm the manager, this is what I want to do. And it happens. He said, like, you know, the players are buying into it. The coaching staff are working overtime, and the fans. I mean, that's the other aspect, is like just watching, you know, even on the back of some pretty poor home form, to say, I think we've always had pretty good travelling support. I think, you know, that's not a biased comment to make. I think City fans have, you know, pretty well known for being decent, you know, away fans and turning up in numbers. But the fact that we have had some pretty poor form, to say, you know, like you said, the Ipswich game and the actually just the crowd figures this season as a whole, you know, really do speak to a huge shift in the way that the club's operating. And it's kind of no surprise that when everything is kind of humming like that, I do think as a lone player, you know, turning up to a club that is as big as City, depending on, you know, who you compare us to, but having the support and having the philosophy and the ambition, it probably does make it a lot easier to play. Whereas, you know, if you're a lone player coming to a mid-table or bottom kind of championship club where you're struggling to get any real home support, I can imagine that would be, you know, quite difficult, where you're probably just, you know, bemoaning the fact that you're not playing for your parent club and you've been shipped out to tougher pastures. And I think that's... You know, it's no surprise to me that the lone players are flourishing under Rossignol and enjoying their time, you know, in front of the City fans.
I thought you were going to name a club there as an example and throw someone under the bus, but you restrained yourself. So that was good. Didn't make any enemies. Yeah, look, I completely agree. And we'll talk more in the Ipswich game about like that home crowd and when they got going, when they were behind the team, and you look at the full stadium and you look at, you know, under the lights, it just feels like, it feels like such a big, I kind of hate using the term, but it feels like a big club, sort of big club atmosphere. And you look at two fans scoring that first goal against Ipswich and you just think, yeah, you know, this is how it should be. So we've got a comment from Ross. Yeah, we're sort of jumping ahead to we'll do the player ratings for the Coventry game, then we'll talk Ipswich in more detail. But Ross is saying, you send the lap of honour, Delap, Ohio, Morton all had beaming smiles on their faces, would love to see a long form of it. I assume, do you mean in terms of getting them back permanently or next season as well? I think would be great to see, or just an extended cut of that lap of honour would be awesome to see as well, to see all the players going around, because it's a bit of a funny one, because it's sort of a farewell to the home crowd for the season, but of course there may yet be one more home game to come if things fall our way. But look, I'll throw to you first for your votes for the Coventry game, and then I'll give mine, and then we'll talk Ipswich in more detail.
Well, I think I gave my one vote to Ohio, and I feel like it was kind of based on the fact that he did as much as he could with what he had, and just the fact that ultimately his goal and his scrappy goal nonetheless has kept our season alive. So a crucial one vote went to him. I gave my two to Greaves. I thought he was, again, inspirational. And I know that I think the last time that I was on, we had a chat at depth about, you know, whether he'll be there next season. And I think it's just when you actually really spend time focusing on what Jacob Greaves has done and how he's playing at the moment. He's so important to what we do. And, you know, I thought he had another stellar game, and Carvalho was the three for mine. I thought, you know, we've talked about his goal scoring form, but he just seems everywhere. He's got confidence. Everything good at the moment, you know, seems to come from him. And I know that earlier on in the season, there was a lot of teams that kind of had the philosophy, if you shut down Jaden Philogene, you shut down Hull. I think that there's a really good case at the moment for, you know, that's the same thing to be said about Carvalho, because he's just, he's been immense.
Yeah, I went Carvalho for the three as well, and Greaves for the two as well. I thought, you know, there was a couple of times when Coventry was sort of ratcheting up the pressure and Greaves would sort of step up out of defence and intercept a few of their passes and really break up their momentum and restart attacks for us. Whether he's here or not next season, I think, you know, personally, I love the romance of the hometown kid taking his club up to the Premier League, whether that's this season or next season. I think it'd be brilliant if he stuck around for that. I also can acknowledge that, you know, he's given three pretty solid seasons to us. It's not a Lewis Potter, where I feel like Lewis Potter went too quickly. This is Greaves kind of going up in the peak of his powers. He made Championship Team of the Season. I honestly think he'd be able to slot into whether it's a mid-table Premier League club or else go to a bigger Premier League club and play as that rotation option. I think I'd rather see him at a mid-table club where he's playing week in, week out, like a Fulham or an Everton. Well, I'm Everton, not really mid-table, but like that Palace, something like that potentially. I guess we'll see what happens this summer. And then I went Philogene for the one vote. I think Philogene is doing a lot around the ground as well these days. Like, he's not just there for an attacking outlet. I think he's doing a lot defensively as well. I think it's really good to see. I think the Ipswich game was another great example where he's getting stuck in, he's breaking down, runs down those wings and sort of recycling possession for us. And I think that's been a really good development in his game over the season, because at times we've been quite critical of his, he'll switch off sometimes when defending and his man might get past him. We were talking the West Brom game before the podcast, but I think it was sort of him at fault for that West Brom equaliser that day. But he's really improving and sort of lifting that mentality in terms of defending first, I suppose, but sort of if we've lost possession, getting back and helping defence. And I saw that a lot in that Coventry game, and obviously got the first goal as well. 12 goals is a remarkable contribution for him. I think I was looking up the stats the other day. Bowen in his first season for us had something like 14 goals and one assist at the same age. They were both 21. And Philogene's at 12 goals and six assists or something like that. So he's, in terms of goal contributions, more than matched, you know, Jared Bowen in that first season, which is pretty remarkable. And so he's having a stellar season as well.
There's actually one more thing that I'd add to that as well, while we're praising Jaden Philogene, is just the kind of defensive urgency that he warrants. You do see that whenever he does get the ball at his feet, because he is so lively and always looking to, you know, to take on his opposite. Quite often that second, you know, central defender has to come across and help. And you saw them, I know you saw Ipswich do it a lot, have to kind of somewhat double team him. And I think that that's got a lot to do with, you know, them kind of having to pay so much attention to Philogene that when Carvalho gets on the ball, or anyone else, but particularly Carvalho, there is a real struggle to try and kind of stop it. So I think that a lot of the work, as you said, he's become far more active in his, you know, defensive duties. But just his presence alone is something that is hugely benefiting, I think, the entire squad.
Yeah, well, we'll talk Ipswich now, and you're right. Like, I think one of the key things early in that game for us was Philogene's ability to draw a couple of yellow cards for their defenders and put them on the back foot in that sense. I think it was Twanzabi who arguably could have been sent off, really. I mean, he had a few nibbles at Philogene and Carvalho at different times in that game. He did get booked, but escaped a red card. To be honest, though, I thought the ref actually had a pretty good game against Ipswich. I thought the Coventry ref was quite poor, but I thought that the ref in the Ipswich game controlled the game quite well. But Philogene, I thought, was terrific again against Ipswich. But we've sort of already touched on the game at the edges, but just sum up, like, what was that game like for you? Because that, to me, that's up there as one of the games of the season, not just for City, but for the whole of the league, in terms of you've got these two teams at the peak of their powers just kind of going blow for blow and coming away with a 3-3 draw. I think, excusing the cliche, but I think it's a perfect advertisement for the championship and a perfect sort of summation of what these two clubs are about.
It really was. It was one of those games that I think at the kind of the 83rd or 84th minute before, you know, Ohio equalised, I kind of got this feeling that I was like, this has been such a great game to watch. And, you know, it does look like we've kind of thrown our last, you know, had our last throw of the dice and, you know, we're just going to kind of taper off. But it's been a good season. And, you know, that was kind of how I felt, like, you know, a bit unlucky in a few games that we probably could have won or done better with. And then when that goal went in and Ohio did, you know, level it up, I just thought this really speaks to not just what's happening in this 90 minutes and what's happened this season, but it was almost like to me the sign of, yeah, like you said, it was such a good advertisement for the championship. But for me, it kind of was like the icing on the cake as far as like we're back. Like, I don't think I've been really willing to kind of read into the hype that we're a playoff team and all that kind of stuff, only because I think that the championship feels so deep these days. Like, I know the championship always has been. It's, we know how much of a difficult league it is to get out of. But if you look at some of the, you know, the clubs that are languishing in the championship at the moment, who have played in the Premier League, you know, frequently in the last 10 years, like, it is littered with yo-yo clubs. And that's made it really difficult, you know, to get out of. And Ipswich are a team that's emerged, you know, from the ashes, like, so to speak. And I just thought that given what's happened under the alums and the disgruntled fans and all that kind of stuff, it almost feels like we're ahead of schedule. And it looks like that what Rossignol and Ajun and Tan have done and the whole kind of club philosophy just seems like it was paying off. Like, the football quality in that game was great, but the players wanted to be there. They weren't ready to kind of surrender. And I think that's just what I've kind of seen, you know, in the last couple of years is, don't think the City players have been as galvanized. Like, you know, they've huffed and puffed, but then kind of fallen over it, you know, when it's got a little bit tough and haven't really had the, I guess, say the desire to go on with it. And that's got a lot to do with the surrounding issues. But to hear the roar when two fans scored and to watch the kind of the players, how animated they were, to see the, you know, the MKM bouncing, it was just a treat. And I was so glad that, you know, we are able to take it to the final week and against a team that, you know, is up, like, essentially, who have played out of their skins. It was just remarkable. And I was so glad to see it. I was so glad we got the third goal. But ultimately, just I had to catch my breath after the performance. It was an epic game to watch.
Yeah, and just to underline as well the feeling of us being back, I saw the stat just this morning that I think our cumulative attendances for home games ticked over 500,000 with that attendance at the Ipswich game, which was the first time that's happened since 1966-67. So that just underlines, obviously, because in the Premier League season there's less home games, so it means that even if we had those sellouts in the Premier League, we didn't achieve that sort of number. But it shows that, to your point about, you know, kind of emerging from the shadow of the alums, that even in, was it the 2015-16 season under Bruce when we went back up through the championship, where you would have assumed that we'd have huge crowds sort of supporting the team, we had great players playing for us, we didn't have these sorts of crowds because there was that animosity towards the alums. And it now finally feels like we've kind of emerged from that. We've got the club and the city and the players all pulling in the one direction. And like you said, I think it was typified by that two-fan goal. And when that goal went in, because we, having gone down early against Ipswich, you'd be forgiven for thinking, oh, you know, here we go again. We've conceded early. That's it. You know, we're gonna half and puff and they'll probably add a second. And that's sort of, there's our season gone. But then you've got, as Seri closes down, the Ipswich defender wins the ball back, plays two-fan in, and all of a sudden the stadium just erupts and there's that emotional feeling of like, okay, hang on, we're actually in this game. We're actually going toe-to-toe with them and we've got a chance here. And that belief and the energy and the crowd was getting into it. And it was funny because when Ohio came on, I think he had a chance before he scored. I think he hit the crossbar. And you saw him sort of urging the crowd to get into it more because you could just see the players feeding off that energy from the crowd. And, it was just such a brilliant game in that sense.
And let's not forget as well, and I know this is kind of a hard comment to make as a City fan, but I mean, maybe it's a bit, over the top to say that Asa Hutchinson's second goal was an absolute worldie, but, you know, there was two fantastic goals scored by Ipswich, like absolute, you know, cracker goal. So like, if you're just watching the championship as a kind of, as a neutral, and that was the, you know, display that you were kind of treated to, especially like you said, I think maybe you mentioned it before we went to air, but the fact that it was that later kickoff, you knew that pretty much everybody was probably locked into that game because it was the, you know, the probably the game with all the eyes of the nation on it. And that was just even more remarkable to see like two teams going at it, the quality of goals that were scored and just the pace. Like some of the football we played was outstanding and it was just a real treat to watch. So, no, I can't say enough. It's probably the most satisfied I've ever been after a draw.
Yeah, no doubt. There were some negatives in the game, though. I'd hate to be too critical in a game like this, but I thought especially for the first goal, Morton not doing enough with that cross. He sort of, I guess, put his foot over it or mistimed it or something. He did go off at halftime. I think it's interesting because I don't think he had a particularly good game against Coventry either. I was making this point in the chat. It's an interesting one with Morton because I think he's had a terrific season, but I think in the last month or 6 weeks, he's certainly not been in the sort of form that he necessarily was earlier in the season. And so I think for all the talk of, oh, when these loan players go back, we'll have a worse squad and we won't be as good or whatever, I think the confidence in me comes from looking at the way we've been playing. And it sort of is underlined by that front four scoring the goals so evenly as well, where it's we're not a team of individuals anymore. We are a team that is greater than the sum of its parts, where I think, you know, yes, we will lose a lot of those parts over the summer potentially, but I'm kind of confident in the fact that it seems that our philosophy and our style of play and the players buying into that will actually give us that consistency, even if the players themselves or the parts themselves change. I look at Morton not necessarily having his greatest game, but I look at, you know, Seri having come back into form in the last month when he was looking a bit down at points after the AFCON. I look at, you know, Slater stepping in at right back when Coyle's been out injured and doing a terrific job. I thought, you know, he had his weaker moments in this game, but I thought he also had some really good points as well. So I think the squad itself and the team itself as a broader whole is actually stepping up. But, you know, yeah, Morton on that instance for that first goal was probably at fault.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think what's interesting is, like, you know, we talked a lot at the start of the season about how interested we were to see what Harry Vaughan was going to do to contribute. I mean, that is kind of something that we thought he would have a huge role in. And yet instead we're seeing, you know, the emergence of Matty Jacob. You know, Mick Lachlan again was crucial for us last season. He hasn't really, you know, featured all that much. And a lot of that's got to do with, you know, how effective the combination of Greaves and McLaughlin's been. And so, and Jones, Alfie Jones, my apologies. But you're right. It does just seem that, like, across the season, across the, you know, the large stretch of games, it's people have been going kind of in and out of form and you're kind of looking to pinpoint stars. I'd argue Jaden Philogene's been spectacular, but some of the people that we thought would kind of feature and, you know, instead haven't necessarily been the people who have put their hands up. And they have in patches, but it seems like when they've failed, other people have kind of emerged. And it really does speak to the squad mentality and the fact that when you're playing a philosophy or, like, I guess a playing style, it's very different to just relying on stars to just be, you know, spectacular week in, week out. And I think that's probably the biggest difference in watching this City team play.
And my big frustration with Tufan as well, I think over the offseason he's got to get better at, he's got to get some heading practice in, because I can think there's probably a number of games this season where he's had free headers. I can't remember what game it was. There was definitely another game where he had a completely free header that bounced up to him and he headed it over the bar. And he's done it again here early in the second half where you just, like, towards the end of the game, you're right, like when we were down 3-2 and I'm thinking, oh, that Morton stuff up, oh, that Tufan miss. Like, you're looking back at moments in the game even, you think there were some clear moments where we could have scored even more goals than we did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what is really interesting about Tufan is he always does seem to find himself in incredible positions. Like, the fact that we're noticing,
which is a credit to him.
That's right. And so I think, like, you know, I know you probably said it more tongue in cheek, but the reality is that, like, that is actually an area of his game that if he spends time working on that, like, he probably is going to add an extra 3, 4, maybe 5 goals a season to his, you know, to his return. And that's that really does kind of not just, I say, like, up his, like, his player value, but also, like, what that can do to a season as far as, you know, points, like, points on the league table, you know, is remarkable. So yeah, look, there's areas for him to definitely work on, but I think that you kind of need to, and I'm not saying that you're not doing this, but we need to look at it as a whole. And when Ozan Tufan arrived at Hull, like, he just looked like he was, you know, he was out of shape, and kind of you could see that there was a player there. I know he had that patchy, like, start where he scored a few goals, and we're like, oh, okay, what a player. And then I don't know, that was just a frustration for me. It was like, he just didn't look fit. Whereas now he looks incredibly fit. His attitude, you know, seems always positive. And boy, has he contributed and been, you know, a remarkable player for us this year.
I actually had in the back of my mind, we should probably be looking at, I don't know when his contract runs out, but because this will be his, is this his third season with us or only his second? Yeah, must be his.
Going into his third,
yeah. So I don't know if he was on like a 3+1 deal or something like that. So maybe we've got a bit of time. But, yeah, wouldn't want to leave it for too long in that sense. Dalap then came on at halftime, which I thought was really good. I thought probably wasn't up to starting 2 games in 4 days, having started against Coventry. So it made sense to drop him to the bench. But, you know, came on, injected that pace and urgency and gave us a really bright start to that second half. And then, of course, turns in the cross from Carvalho, which, you know, we've been crying out, like, during his absence with injury, you're sort of looking at all these balls that we're putting into the box and just the fact we've had no one there to put them away. And so then Carvalho puts that ball in and he's just right there and he puts it away, just like a classic striker. And you just know that, you know, that's what we've been missing. And it was great to see him on the score sheet, because I'm sure for a lot of, you know, February, March sort of time, there was a lot of doubt about whether we'd see him again this season as the weeks wore on. And I'm sure for him, he was probably unsure if he was going to make it back. So to at least have gotten on the score sheet, if that was the only goal, at least I'm sure for him makes it feel worthwhile.
Well, I want to even take us back a little bit further than that. I think it was maybe the first part of the season. I think the Tigers Down Under, we talked about, you know, some of the new signings and whether we were excited. And I'm pretty sure, like, across the board, Liam Dalap was kind of one of those players that we were like, oh, yeah, I'm somewhat excited about him. Like, he's fast, he's got attributes, but his goal scoring return, you know, it doesn't exactly, you know, fill us with a lot of confidence. Like, he's young, how will he develop? All those kind of questions, you know, were being asked. And I almost look back now, and I know that this is like probably overselling it in some ways, but it looked like he was really urgent to get back, like, as a loan signing, to, you know, rehab his injury and get back as quickly as he could to, you know, throw himself into the picture and see if he could help with the playoff charge. And I just think for a young player to be as hungry as he was, and to have shown us what he has throughout the course of this season, because I think that would be a huge distraction for me. If I was a Man City player who, you know, came with a lot of accolades, been out on a loan spell before, and then got sent out on a second one, it'd be really easy to kind of think, oh, well, you know, I had a pretty good first half of the season. You know, I can kind of, you know, I'll say rest on my laurels and, you know, cruise into the off season. I've done some pretty good things for the England under-23s. Like, all that kind of stuff would probably run through your head, but he seems like he's a true professional. And as you mentioned, the way he took that second goal, and he looked excited about it as well. It was epic to see.
Yeah, and you're really, you know, spot on with the talk about, you know, he could have very easily just ruled himself out for the season, or Man City could have ruled him out for the season. They could have said, no, he's not going to make it back. If he does make it back, you know, as it's turned out, it's only the last 5 games of the season. They might have said, oh, it's not worth the risk. We'll put him in for surgery. We'll wrap him in cotton wool and get him right for next season. But, you know, full credit to Man City as well as to Dalap for saying, no, actually, let's get him back up and firing. Which also speaks to, I think, the relationship that the clubs have, because I remember, I'm going back a long way here, but I think it was it Daniel Ayala was on loan from Liverpool and also had a pretty bad injury. And I think they cancelled his loan. There was one of those players in those early days under Nigel Pearson where they suffered an injury, we sort of wanted to hold on to them and get them to play. Then the parent club pulled them back. And this feels like, you know, it's a good relationship, good working relationship between us and Man City. The clubs respect each other. They know that we're trying to do the best thing for the player. We're not going to sort of jeopardize his health. And it's working out well for both parties because he's going to have a strong end to the season, which then means either that hopefully we can get him back on loan would be brilliant, or at least, you know, from a Man City perspective, that he'll have, you know, plenty of suitors as well, because it's shown his resilience, it's shown his work ethic and professionalism, as you say. So terrific for all parties, really. And if it's the goals that get us into the playoffs, then that's brilliant for us as well. And then, of course, the winner coming from Ohio off the bench. We sort of already talked about him with the Coventry game, but, like, I don't know, like, this, his desire and willingness to improve. Like, again, like you said, like, Rossini's comments about this group of loan players, it really is ringing true, because sometimes you get these platitudes from managers where you kind of just roll your eyes and think, oh, they're just sort of saying it. It's just, you know, lip service to the players because you've got to suck up to the players or whatever. But the proof's in the pudding, and these players are really working hard. They're really, you know, it would have been so easy for Ohio to just drop his head and go, I'm not even making the match day squad. What am I doing here? I'll just go back to Belgium and not worry about it. But he's put his head down. He's worked hard. He's made it into the squad, and he's getting his rewards for it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but wouldn't it be a special story if he was to pop up for his third last gasp winner this weekend and be the goal that secures our playoff berth.
Is this season's prospect?
That's right. It's the fairy tale that we need. So, you know, it's been awesome. And that's, like you said, I think a lot of the, particularly is, like I say, armchair pundits, you know, I'm not going to put us in the Sky Sports category. Like, we watch football as really optimistic fans, and, you know, we love the romance of, you know, of goals and stories and all that kind of stuff. But we're not always privy to that stuff that goes on in the background. And, you know, the resilience that players do require when they aren't making the squad or they've suffered injury, because, you know, if they're not contributing to what we're seeing week in, week out, then, you know, in our heads, they're kind of out of sight, out of mind. And I think that that's a really important thing, particularly for someone like Ohio, who hasn't, you know, really had the opportunity to endear himself to the City fans, to have to be working so hard behind the scenes and then to come in and have the, you know, incredible role that he's played in the last 7 days. It's just awesome, and I'm really stoked for him. And as we touched on before earlier in the pod, it's the fact that he kind of resembles a lot of what is good about the club at the moment.
Yeah, Ross in the comments also saying Ermo filling in at centre mid for Morton shows great utility. Class, we have that option for the future. And yeah, that's right. I mean, I presumed that Ermo was coming in as essentially the permanent replacement for someone like Carvalho, where he can play that right wide role, but also play that central midfield role. And if he can play that deeper role as well, that's another brilliant option to have. You were a little critical of him with that second Hutchinson goal. Questioning that, you know, it's a fair comment that, you know, you've probably seen the highlights of this guy before the game, and we haven't closed him down for the first goal. But after that first goal, you know, it's fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Isn't that how it goes? And we didn't close him down the second time.
No, that's right. I think that was kind of the thing. Like, as I mentioned, I feel like I want to be careful with how I phrase this, because I've already described both of Asa Hutchinson's goals as worldies and a great advertisement for the championship. But I do think that a player, you know, with a left foot like his, who is going to cut back in, both of those finishes were remarkable. But definitely, I thought, you know, Umar probably gave him that little bit too much time, you know, for him to be able to get that shot off, to kind of drift across and get that shot off. However, I want to say that, you know, 90% of players in the championship, or probably maybe I'd say even 95% of the championship players, aren't going to finish, you know, across the front of the entire goal face and then beat Allsop at the far post. So, you know, remarkable finish. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, shut down a little bit quicker. And to see him do it twice was, you know, soul destroying. But as you said, like, the game was so fast-paced and it was incredibly open, so it's not really a surprise to see that opportunities like that eventually over the course of 90 minutes will present themselves, and you know, credit to Asa Hutchinson. They were well taken. Yeah.
And then in terms of votes for this game, I've had to go Carvalho for the three again. I thought another terrific game from him, tapped off with that cross across the box for Delap's goal. I thought he was brilliant, really running the show in midfield. And I think, look, his performances have really sort of stepped up again and again over these closing weeks of the season. I know that there was sort of a patch after he arrived where people were sort of questioning if he was worth the hype and whether he was actually sort of justifying his spot in the team. But I think he's really showing his class, especially in this run-in. And, you know, his celebration against Coventry, which somehow earned him a yellow card. I thought, you know, Jamie Vardy did much worse than that at the MKM and got nothing. But as a player who, you know, 99% is not likely to be here next season in Carvalho, I think he's another one who's just completely bought into the shirt. And, you know, you'd be forgiven, especially when you cast your mind back to those first few games when he played here, when the MKM surface was, you know, sort of a mud patch at times. You'd be forgiven for a kid from Liverpool coming in and thinking, what am I doing here? I was playing for RB Leipzig a couple of weeks ago. He's really bought into it. He's really embraced the club. And as I sort of said earlier, I mean, he's on track for his best return goals-wise in his career. And he's just looked terrific.
Yep, I've got no problems with those. So sorry, did you give your 3-2-1?
I just said
gave just me a pause. Look, if you want me to talk about or continue talking about how great Carvalho is, then I'm happy to, you know, to talk till midnight. But
no, that's Alex, all good.
Your three points to Carvalho is awarded. I'd love to hear your 2-1.
And look, and then I went Ohio for the two. I guess sort of similar logic to you giving him a vote for the Coventry game. I thought it's a two votes for the cumulative efforts for the Coventry and Ipswich games, getting us what, 3 points off his own boot with the 2 points he's given us against Coventry and the 1 point against Ipswich. I think he's been terrific, and he's really swung me around a full 180 from thinking he didn't have a future at the club to me now thinking, oh, you know, probably should put a cheeky bid in for him in the summer and get him in here on a permanent. Because you just have to think, if he's made that much improvement in the space of a couple of months under Rosenia, what could he look like after a full pre-season and really having that stability and confidence that he's here for the long term? I think there's a lot of promise, a lot of potential in him, really. And then I gave the one vote to Allsop, who I think is, in some cases fairly, in some cases unfairly, come in for a lot of criticism from City fans, because I think, you know, you always need a scapegoat. If we don't win a game, you always need to look for a reason why we haven't won. And quite often that's Allsop has, you know, not necessarily covered himself in glory with some of his saves. But in this game, he's made 7 saves. He's made a save in stoppage time at point-blank range that's basically saved us that point. There was another one a bit earlier against Kiefer Moore where I thought he was outstanding to make a stop with really strong wrists to push the shot around the post. So I think, you know, recognising him and giving him credit where it's due, I thought he had a terrific display against Ipswich.
Yep, absolutely. I'm glad that you gave your 2 points to Ohio, because he didn't get any of mine, and I was going to give him the honourable mention. I like the fact that you probably did a podcast first too, where you gave him cumulative points across 2 games. so I agree with you. I had Carvalho for my 3. I thought he was outstanding and just looks to have that class that kind of, you know, reassures us that he's probably not a championship player, which, you know, is good and bad for us, because it probably means that we definitely won't have him next season. As you said, I think 99% was your statistical rating. But he certainly, you know, he's proven with the goal-scoring form he's in and the influence he has on matches at the moment, definitely 3 points. I gave the 2 points to Philogene because you kind of talked about it before. I just think that he offers so much in the way of, you talked about how much effort he does defensively and how much he's really, you know, kind of everywhere. Like he plays well on both ends, but just the influence he has when he has the ball and how much opportunity that seems to create, because he warrants, you know, heavy marking. So he was the 2 points, and I gave also my one vote. And I thought it's actually kind of worth mentioning. And I don't want to say here that I think Allsop is the best keeper by any stretch. And I do in many ways understand the criticism. I think it might be fair to say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, we troll a few of the forums and try to, you know, keep our finger on the pulse as to kind of what the general gist of and feeling of City fans are. But he seems to be the person that cops the most flack, or the player at the most currently, I would say, who seems to be, you know, having his finger being pointed at the most for his role in kind of how we're playing. But I also think it's important to mention that the fact that the philosophy Rossinho is talking about, you know, about being brave with the ball and looking to play out almost 100% of the time, I think that that kind of, you know, does mean that by proxy, he is going to be the one when things go pear-shaped that it will fall on. I think that, you know, as you mentioned, like we could really quickly talk about the poor finishing or, you know, somewhat poor finishing of Tufan, but it doesn't really get talked about because there were still three goals scored in the game. And we're really quick to kind of, you know, throw shade at Allsop. I think that a lot of the times, you know, he has been at fault. It's because he's been the one that's starting the play or trying to kind of, you know, bring out this philosophy. And there's a real art to that. So I think it's worth mentioning. He might not be the best keeper. I think that it probably will be an area that I imagine we will look to strengthen over the off-season. But, yeah, it's we have to be very aware that the role that he has played in many of the games as well. And like you said, some of his shot stopping has been fantastic. And that was certainly the case on the weekend.
Well, interesting with Panda, obviously sitting in the stands really, because he hasn't been on the bench the last few games with Ingram on the bench. It'll be interesting to see what's happening there in terms of if he's going to be the number one over the summer and into the next season. And so that solves the problems. But we'll jump now into the preview for the last game against Plymouth. I'll bring up, because I haven't actually done it yet this season, but I'll bring up, if I can make this a little bit bigger so we can actually see it, the table as it stands, which I'm sure a lot of City fans have already had a good look at. A couple of things to note. I mean, first of all, we've locked ourselves into finishing no lower than, I guess not technically no lower than seventh. We could finish eighth if Coventry win their last two games, although I don't think that's hugely likely, but also hitting 70 points. I think Sunderland made sixth last season with 69 points. So to already have topped that tally with a reasonable chance we'll, you know, get something against Plymouth at least is pretty remarkable in itself. But, you know, I guess most likely scenario that we've got to be looking at now is a West Brom loss to Preston and then us to knock off Plymouth to make it in. You know, the seven-goal swing that we'd need against Norwich, probably not likely to eventuate. But you look at West Brom's form with three losses in a row, and it's interesting, actually, I sort of posted in our chat today that I think we actually sit third in the form table across the division, which is pretty remarkable when you think that I think West Brom, Norwich, basically all the sides around us are all basically right at the bottom. So I saw the comment or heard the comment earlier today in another podcast that if we were to make the playoffs, we'd actually be going in as basically the form side in the playoffs. So whilst there's a very good chance we don't even make it, if we were to make it, we'd almost be arguably the favourites, which would be quite remarkable. But, it all kind of comes down to this weekend against Plymouth. We've got to get the 3 points against them and hope West Brom drop them. But it of course, isn't a guarantee because Plymouth find themselves sitting in 21st, 1 point above the relegation zone. So I suppose the worst case scenario for us would be Birmingham taking the lead against Norwich, putting Plymouth into the relegation zone and then basically sort of firing them up. You'd sort of want Norwich to get a couple of goals early, have Plymouth have nothing to play for because they're already safe, and then they can just sort of roll over and give us the win.
Well, that unless Birmingham decide to win by seven goals, then that would also be
Yeah, that's right. It sort of works both ways, doesn't it?
You're right. I think that this is such a tricky one because, you know, if you were to compare the matchups between, you know, the pitcher for West Brom and the pitcher for us, it's an interesting one because arguably Preston don't really have much to play for at all. West Brom at the moment seem like they're in free fall. So they, you know, between the two of them, they look like they'll be tripping over each other because Preston have had a really poor run themselves. And then I guess the fact that we have to win, against a very, very desperate, you know, Plymouth. Like, there'd be a huge case to be made that even though Plymouth sits so far down the, you know, the league ladder, we would almost be rather playing Preston this weekend in many ways. Although we know the championship and we know that it kind of doesn't work like that anyway. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting.
And it's interesting as well because if Plymouth need to win, they will be throwing everything at us, and that actually tends to work in our favour. Whereas if they had nothing to play for and they sat back, like we had a 0-0 with Preston a few weeks ago, if we were playing a Preston who had nothing to play for and just sort of sat back, that's almost the hardest opposition for us. So the only thing is that I'm convinced that Preston and West Brom are going to have a 0-0 draw. West Brom's going to say, if we get a point, we make the playoffs. Preston are going to go, well, we don't really need to score a goal. Both teams are just going to pass it around and then that's it done.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's definitely not the, you know, the best kind of fixture if you were looking for the perfect scenario on the last day. But I really doubt that there is a perfect scenario for the championship in the last day. I think that realistically, if we're to kind of, you know, reflect and do a bit of self-evaluation, in many ways, we're very, very lucky to be in this, you know, situation, given our home form, you know, in more recent times and some of those really key games that we just absolutely underperformed in. And if we were able to, you know, do the right things.
Our hopes are on Will Keane. Who would have thought? I did have that thought. I'm like, sure, you know, and Robbie Brady as well. Surely they can do us a solid.
No, that's exactly right. And look, I would be not surprised to see, you know, the most obscure, you know, chop and change and twists and turns fixture this weekend. I think that it won't be clear cut. I know you said that, you know, in all likelihood you see West Brom, Preston, nil or draw or something like that because they're just their tools down. But I just don't think that that's sort of how the how the last day of the season works, you know, funnily enough. And so, look, we hold on to hope. It's unlikely. I think if we were to put a like percentage rating on, you know, whether we're gonna win and have that result go away, I think, you know, it's never a nice position to make it to the final day and your destiny not be in your own hands. But you know,
how likely would you, if you did have to give a percentage to it, what chance would you give it?
Look, I would say that as we start the day, I reckon it's probably like a 20% chance. Actually, excuse my ignorance. Is that Preston West Bromwich game? Whereabouts
it's
is that?
It's at West Brom. I thought it might be at Preston, which would help. But yeah, no, it's at West Brom.
So the difficulty is that, you know, they're going to travel to the Hawthorns. They don't really have much to play for. It's going to be a packed stadium with, you know, a buzzing atmosphere. I can't really see how West Brom lose that game. And in saying that, you know, stuff happens.
The only slight thing I'd say is there's a couple of factors that they do have to play for, which is top half finish, because they're only, I'm just looking at the table again, they're only a point above Bristol City and Cardiff. Oh, sorry, I guess they're definitely guaranteed top half because they're above Swansea, but Bristol City and Cardiff just behind them. And also, I mean, I look back on last season when we played Forest on the final day, and I remember the mentality being like, you want to be the spoilers. You want to be the ones to actually have a say on the playoff race. And so even if you're not going to make it, you want to be the team that actually has a say in that playoff race. So there would be something for the players in that. But look, I mean, I come back to your point as well on the fact that we can essentially blame ourselves, I suppose, for not making it. But I point out, like, you know, Sunderland last season making it on 69 points, we're above that total. We've arguably done enough in that sense. But you're also right that, of course, that especially if we miss out on goal difference, you sort of look at it and go, we've been very critical at times this season of only winning games by one goal, of kind of going 1-0 up or 2-1 up and then just sort of sitting on the lead and not going for the kill. It's potentially a harsh lesson for Rossini to learn that, you know, conservative football doesn't always pay off.
Yep. And I think then, you know, that kind of opens up the floodgates when you go back and kind of start to critique some of the results that we've had. And, you know, there has been games where we have thrown the kitchen sink and then we've got on the pod and praised Rossini for the fact that, you know, in the past we might not have done that. And I'm trying to think of what game that was. It was around mid-season where I think Rossini said he had he didn't even know what formation he was playing. And we did. I think we scored two goals in the second half that ended up resulting in a win. But I think that that's a really important, you know, philosophy, because you've got teams like, I don't know, I've talked about this before, when the fans used to complain about Steve Bruce because it was like, oh, we're so defensively minded, we're not scoring enough goals. I think we beat Millwall 4-1 one day, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, yeah, how good's life under Steve Bruce, just because we had one game where we won. But there were so many 1-0 results, and we ended up going up that season. So it's a very interesting time period, purely because we are playing a very different style of football than what we've seen. And so as a result of that, there's been so much new things that have had to be learned. And as a result, you know, to look at our goal difference and see how many goals we've conceded, whilst it's not the worst in the championship, if you wanted to break those down and you say how many of those goals have been, you know, detrimental to our own fault, like silly turnovers from trying to play out, and then we've just been turned, like you could probably make a case for like 8 or 10 goals of that on our goal difference. And, you know, if you turn that into league points, I feel like I've gone on a tangent here, but if you do turn that into league points, you know, well and truly, then you're well up around the 80 mark. So it is a game of very fine margins across, you know, 46 games.
And I can't help but look specifically at the games against Norwich and West Brom, and that second game against West Brom in particular that we drew 1-1, both Norwich games, that first game of the season where they scored in the 99th minute or whatever it was to win it 2-1, and then came to our place and, you know, Angus Gunn basically knocked Aaron Connolly into next week, didn't get sent off, and they won that one as well. And you just think those particular games, because they were against these sides that we're sort of chasing down, have had such a huge impact on the season that if they had gone that other way, I mean, I'm looking at it as, you know, we've lost 13 games of the season, Norwich have lost 14. So we've arguably been better in that sense, but then we've obviously got, three more draws than them. So we've just not been able to convert those draws into wins. So I think regardless of how the season ends up, it's been a hugely successful season. And if we are to finish seventh or even eighth, I think it's a great sort of galvanizing season for next year to give us that belief that we can do it. It gives players the confidence that the project is real and that we're progressing and we look like a great club to join. But we are going on a bit of a tangent. We can talk the Plymouth game itself as well if you want, or if you have one more point.
No, but my point is, Alex, I want to take the mantle off you. I feel like you do a great job of facilitating, you know, the Tigers pod week in, week out. But I would like to hear your predictions for the final day before you ask me mine, because I think that quite often not that your read's based off ours, but you always have the the right of reply. I'd like to hear it. You know, guns ahead, what happens this weekend?
Look, I really hesitate because I don't want to be the pessimist who says that, you know, it's not going to happen. I just have this feeling that, like I was sort of saying before, I can see a draw in the West Brom Preston game that basically rules out any chance, no matter what we do. My worry as well is just that Plymouth do have so much to play for that we will sort of tighten up a little bit with that sort of pressure on us. But it honestly is just so unpredictable because, like, as I was sort of saying, there's pros and cons, and no matter how you look at it, that, you know, a Plymouth side that's coming out and attacking us and needing to win gives us the chances to get in behind, and Philogene can find that space, Carvalho can find that space. I really think we will win it. I think we might go behind early, and in some ways that's actually a good thing for us. I think going behind means that we do really just have to throw everything at it and just go for it. And when we do that, we play quite well, more often than not. What I'd just love to see, just like a pressing goal in the first 10 minutes to give us that hope that this could actually happen. Like, the worst thing in the world for me, like, even if West Brom win, I'd actually prefer that to a 0-0, because the 0-0 is just like, the longer it goes on, you're like, oh, a Preston goal could do it. The Preston goal could do it. And then it just finishes 0-0. Would just be the worst feeling. So if it's, you know, a West Brom win, then so be it. But yeah, if Preston can score a goal early and just give us that hope that this could actually be on. It reminds me, this the hype and the build-up to this definitely reminds me of that Steve Bruce promotion in 2012-13, which was sort of the last time we were in this sort of situation, because when we made the playoffs the second time under Bruce, we were just comfortably, fifth or whatever it was, like resting players towards it. Like, we were comfortable. This is the first time it's really felt like permutations and looking at other teams and what's going to happen. And it feels like that. And that day was the biggest roller coaster of emotion when you think we went, what was it? We went 2-1 down against Cardiff and then 2-2. what was it? It was, we went 1-0 down, then 2-1 up, then it was 2-2. Oh no, then we had a penalty to go up 3-1. We missed that. Then they went 2-2. But then the Watford keeper got injured. And so we had, there was some kid in goal, and then Leeds scored the goal against the kid in goal and beat them anyway. So we went up, and you know, it's final day. Crazy things can happen. And it's, I've been saying for the last few weeks, just wanted to take it to the final day, and you know, anything can happen really. But I don't know. What do you think is going to happen? It's just, yeah, it's so hard to predict.
I tend to be like you, articulating my thoughts. I just get caught and start chasing all these radical ideas. I think that there are some great parallels, and I think it's what we love about football, the fact that anything can happen. And I know that is the most cliche thing in world sport, but in the championship, literally anything can happen. We've seen it happen. We've been on the, you know, receiving end of it, where we've, like, pure elation and, you know, some of the best, like, life moments that you can remember. Just forget being a football fan. It's like, you know, you put them in your, like, your top five. Like, stuff just happens that you'll just never forget. And it's kind of cool that that may well be something that we do experience this weekend. But I think that that fixture is one that largely plays into West Brom's hands. I think that they just have too much going for them. And I kind of asked myself the question, if that was at the MKM and we were in a position like that, you would feel really confident about it. But with all that being said, you kind of hit the nail on your head. You said you really hope Preston score first, because we also know that that, particularly when you're a team who's been down and are in a patch of really poor form, chasing a game with a really tense atmosphere at home, I think it becomes a huge challenge. And that's what I think needs to happen. I think for us to be any chance, if I was to make a prediction, I think West Brom are probably going to win, like, maybe 2-0. I think it is likely to be comfortable. However, if a Preston goal gets scored early, that's when it really means anything can happen. So on that side of the coin, I don't think that we end up getting a choice. I think this is going to be a really, really tough fixture. I think Plymouth are going to turn up. I think they're going to throw everything. And I tend to agree with you. I think we're going to fall behind. And whether we've got the kind of, you know, resolve to play back into it, particularly because I think it will turn into an open game, that will be the interesting thing. But I've kind of in my head mentally banked the fact that we're getting 3 points and it's all about the other game. And I just don't think it's going to be that easy.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think everyone's sort of looking at it as, oh, well, we just need West Brom to lose, as if our game's a given. And I don't think that's the case. I'd really hope that Norwich do just belt Birmingham, and then that Plymouth don't really have that threat, and that they can just sort of relax and down tools a little bit. I think, as you say, I think the issue with West Brom is that if they do score a goal early, West Brom, that is, that pressure valve will release for them, and that they will go on and probably win 2 or 3 nil, because they'll just be like, oh, we're up 1-0, we're home, we're into the playoffs, we can relax. But yeah, if Preston get like a dodgy penalty early, or they score a scrappy goal or something like that, the crowd will just turn, the players will go into their shells, and I think it becomes a whole different ballpark. And the news then filters through to us that suddenly, you know, this is a real thing, you know, this is on. Like a Preston goal early, a Norwich goal early would just be a perfect way to go. And then Plymouth relax, we go for the attack. And look, I'm just excited. Like this, like I said, this is the first time in close to 10 years really, or actually just more than 10 years that we've had this sort of opportunity in the championship. Closest we've come was obviously that League One title win, which was pretty awesome in itself, but to have this sort of permutations for the playoffs is a pretty exciting thing in itself. And look, we've taken it to the final day, and I guess we just have to see how it goes.
In one word, before this weekend happens, successful season?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we sort of said at the start of the season, to be disappointed to miss the playoffs would be a successful season. And yeah, I mean, it sucks in the moment. It sucks in the now if we don't make the playoffs, but, you know, can't be any happier. And look, I mean, we'll have the postseason podcast to review this all anyway, but I think you get to the Premier League and it's not always as great as you think it'll be in the sense that you're getting belted most weeks. You're going on these long winless runs. You're playing teams that are, you know, hundreds of times, you know, more valuable than yours. You're just going to go straight back down potentially, where the journey is actually more fun than the destination. And so I'm like, this is actually almost the most fun bit is the journey. So I'm just loving it. And yeah, it's great.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I think it's been a, regardless of what result we, you know, we experience on the weekend and whether we still have a playoff campaign, you know, it's yet to be seen, but the fact that, you know, we're still here on the final week of the season with a lot to play for and a squad that has been really fun to watch, I think is, you know, given us a real sense of hope and optimism, not just for this season and not just for this weekend, but moving forward, I'm really excited about, you know, what happens next season, irrespective of, you know, the potential playoff run that may still await. So, yeah, it's been awesome to watch.
And I guess final question before we do sign off, because we haven't actually talked too much about the specifics on the game. Would you make any changes to the lineup? Would you throw Delap in from the start or would you just go same again from the Ipswich game?
Yeah, I think that's probably the key change if there was one. I thought that Rossini probably showed his cards a little bit when he talked about Delap after the game and said how, you know, how gassed he was and how he just looked kind of shot to pieces and how playing him, you know, two games in a row, two games in 4 days or whatever it was, and then to play as many minutes as he did, he really thinks that he's struggling. So I'd be surprised if, you know, if in the case of 7 days, all of a sudden he's, you know, fit and ready to go. But I think that the fact that, you know, Ohio's done some damage late in games probably more speaks to him coming off the bench. I think Delap, you know, won't start, but they'll probably look to, you know, hit them with some late firepower because it seems to have been working. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix.
Absolutely. And then a score prediction, which we've sort of danced around.
Yeah, look, the score prediction for this one, I think it's got the potential to be a really open game. I think it's going to be like a real fruity scoreline. I think it'll be like a 5-3 or a 4-1. Like, it's not going to be like a 2-1 or so. I'm going to go with something outrageous. I'm going to go 5-3. 5-3, and I'll be optimistic and say City.
Yeah, I think you're probably right in the, like, especially if Birmingham is somehow beating Norwich and Preston is somehow beating West Brom, both us and Plymouth will just be like, oh, we've just got to go for it. We've just got to, like, you know, it's just going to be who can score more goals. So it could end up being one of the crazier games of the weekend. So
maybe we should do a sports bet tip of the week. the Tigers podcast. Put the house on 5-3 City.
I think because they're not the top 20 guys do a betting preview for these. They always have this theory that there's one game that goes like, you know, 7 or 8 goals. Look, it could well be us. And hopefully we're on the right end of it. But look, thank you for joining for this one. It's been a pretty mammoth episode with a pretty big week ahead of us.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like the episode fits the occasion, and it's been really good to chat and reflect on, you know, the fact that we're still here on the last week of the season, because I just didn't think that was going to be the case. So lots to look forward to this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining me for this one, Logan.
No worries. My pleasure.
And thanks, everyone, for listening in. Hopefully we're here next week previewing a couple more games yet in City's season. But until then, come on, City.
You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire. Going higher and higher. There's no turning back 'cause you're out.